This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hello, everybody. Pete Caliendo. Welcome in the U.S. and around the world. We are thrilled you could join us today. A special guest for sure. Our guest in 1995, during the lockout, he must have been so bored he decided to referee the World Wrestling Federation match. And guess between who? The Undertaker and King Kong Bundy. So that must have been incredible, man. And also, don't mess with this guy because he has ejected 68 or 69, depending on what article you read, managers or coaches in the big leagues. But one of the best in the business, one of the best human beings I've ever met, 25 years in Major League umpire, 2,848 regular season games, number 28 umpire, two World Series, two All-Star games, and in 2018 became umpire supervisor for Major League Baseball. He travels all over the world. Want to thank him also for traveling for ISG Baseball to help coaches and umpires, but he travels for Major League Baseball all over the world to help umpires. He's the umpire coordinator for the World Baseball Classic, Pan Am Games, and a lot of events internationally. One of the best in the business and a super person. I like to say he's a good friend, Mr. Larry Young. Let's welcome Larry. What's up, Larry?
Hey, buongiorno, Pietro.
Buongiorno, yeah. John P. Morosi would have been proud of you. How are we doing? You're down, where are you at now? Florida and in the beautiful weather?
I'm home in Florida and staying here, just laying low. And probably going to head north here pretty soon, though. But we've been down here quite a while.
Yeah, and for, you know, people may not know, but Larry's a Chicago guy, even though he's got a place in Florida also. But, you know, one of the things I was thinking about asking you was during this time, you know, everybody's in lockdown, obviously, the umpires, everybody. And I know you've got a lot of meetings going on. But what does an umpire, what do you tell your umpires to do during this time to stay sharp?
Well, cultures kind of change a little bit. Back in my day when the off season was the off season, we really didn't do much, but most of our guys stay in pretty good shape. We have a lot of guys that work out every day, and they're doing that. And we're also doing training right now. Our coordinator of the instant replay, Justin Clem, is handling replay reviews and replay testing and training, because our replay is going to change this year. We're going to take a page from the football officials and start announcing the rule or the changes on the replay. So in other words, if we go to replay and we have an overturned call or we have a call that's been reviewed and stands, after the umpires get off of the headset, they're going to announce it to the crowd. So we've been working on training our umpires in to be ready for that.
Well, that's going to be unique. And I know we were going to get questions about the replay, so I'm glad you brought that up. Umpires, you know, they've got to stay in shape. That I think that's part of the program too. They must have a routine. Even if you're at home, I know I'm doing stuff daily, no matter what. You know, what's advice there? What do they do there to kind of stay in shape? Just the regular stuff?
Well, Mark Letton he just retired, unfortunately, but was a pioneer in umpire health, and he's been instrumental in setting up routines for our guys to stay in shape. And now we have Scott Sheridan, who was with the Phillies for a long time as a trainer, and he's going to carry on that. So they have programs available, and they're doing it like the players. They're doing working out in their home or if they have a gym nearby that they can use, depending on what state they live in. Mm-hmm. Guys are taking advantage of those routines.
Hey, everybody on Facebook, we got some friends on Facebook. Carlos Ray, great umpire on Facebook. Also Rob Allen from Canada. You know, we're going to be getting more on.
Hey, those are my guys. Carlos Ray is is my hijo.
Yeah, that's it. you got a lot of guys internationally, no doubt about that. But I know we're going to have, boy, we got a lot more joining. And I know this is a very important topic. We're going to talk about a bunch of stuff, even umpire relationship. But I did want to get to one area when it comes to, when we're talking about advice for people that want to get into umpiring. Obviously it's changed from when you first started. What's some advice in getting an umpire and things to look forward to and to kind of prepare for?
Well, I never really advise someone to get into professional umpiring, but it's a very rough road. If someone comes to me and says, hey, I'd like to get into professional umpiring, I'd show them the things that they have to do, namely go to umpire school. But I don't really recruit anybody for it because you really have to want to do it to take the professional route. But there is a need for high school, college, youth league umpires. And the best way to do that is to join a local association, get some training from them, and then get on the field. That's the best way to do it. Hopefully you get some training along the way.
Now, the most obvious is, boy, you got to have thick skin. Now, I got to ask you this because, spending time with you, and I didn't mention this, I got a chance to spend time with Larry traveling a few places around the world, and it's always a pleasure because you're always learning constantly from him. But, when you were younger, when you were in the big leagues, you had a lot of ejections. Talk about
that. I wasn't very good. That's why. I wasn't very good.
No, you were good. You were one of the better umpires, I got a feeling. But, ejections are part of the game. But, as an umpire, you got to have tough skin. What are the qualities that I guess that you would look for in an umpire to progress them either, into Major League Baseball or into the minor league system?
Well, to move up into umpiring, to move up in professional ranks is very difficult. First of all, over 300 people go to umpire school a year, and about 20 get jobs, and they go to the low minors. And then you have to work your way up through the low minors, and there's three or four classifications, or I should say there were, I think that's going to change, three or four classifications at the lower level of A-ball. So you have to work your way up and be the top umpires in each of those groups. So most of the people don't make it through umpire school and A-ball. And once you get to AA and AAA, just about everybody knows how to call ball strikes, safes, and outs. And then it comes down to how do you handle people, how you handle situations, how you get along with your bosses, your work ethic, things like that, the intangibles. It's very, very difficult to get to the top.
Larry,
as far as handling situations, it's changed. When I first came in, you had to be pretty tough, and you had to take on Billy Martin and Colonel Weaver and Dick Williams.
Wow.
And things have changed somewhat in that regard, and now we're trying to get our umpires to be less controversial, yet still run the game.
Something you do see, and it just might be my perception of it, umpires seem to be bigger, stronger, more, not intimidating, but, good size.
They're in good shape. They're in much better shape than quite frankly, than we were in the generation before me. So they're very cognizant of health, and they're trying to prolong their careers. And they work at it.
We're going to get to your questions on Facebook, but I got to tell you, we got Adam Doughty on here, and we got
oh, my gosh, these are all my guys, Rob Allen and Adam Doughty and Carlos.
And we've got coaches on here also from all over the world and in the U.S. online. We got some questions, but I'm going to wait a second because also I have Pablo Tesoro. I was a good friend of mine in Argentina where hopefully you're going to be there. They're looking forward to having you. They treat you first class. I was there. And since we're on that international a little bit, Larry, here's what I want to ask you. It was interesting. I was reading 2018, there were about 220 international players in the big leagues, which is about 29%. And in umpires, there was about 6.6% were outside the U.S. That seems to be growing a little bit as you're working all over the world.
Yeah, we have very strong umpires from Venezuela. They have a tremendous umpire school in Venezuela. We have training in Dominican, training in Puerto Rico. All their schools teach the same system we do. Between myself and Jorge Bauza and Gus Rodriguez, we were all on the same page. So the people all over the world are working the same system and getting the same type of training. We're hopeful to get even more people from outside of the U.S. We have some strong umpires in Taiwan. We have some strong umpires in Korea and some strong umpires in Japan and all over the world. So hopefully you'll see more international umpires and possibly a woman umpire in the next decade or so.
You know, internationally, and we're going to jump the rules and player relationships and coaching relationships, but internationally, it can't be easy when you have an umpire. Let's take a guy, Galler, comes from Japan. He's been in it 25 years, 20 years in the big leagues there. They've got their system, their strike zone. I'm assuming they have their technique also. To try to adjust to that, you change it internationally? How does that work?
We're pretty much all on the same page now with Japan and Korea and all over the world. As I said, we teach the same system everywhere, so that makes it a lot easier. You know, Japan is very close to us. They have a professional staff. Taiwan has a professional staff. In Korea, a lot of those people do not want to leave their country and come over here, but some do, and I think you'll see more and more, as I said.
Hey, let's take a question from Rob Allen on Facebook. He says, from Canada. Yes, our good friend on the border here. Can you let us know how you think baseball umpiring at the MLB level has evolved from what it was when you started in the league until now?
Well, the training is much we had training. We went to umpire school. We went through the minor leagues like everybody else. But we really didn't have the supervisors in the minor leagues that they have now. We had one man, Barney Deary, that was in charge of the entire minor league system. You were lucky to see him once a year. So now we have, I believe, 8 minor league instructors that go through the AAA level and work with our umpires. And there is much more training than there was when I first started, much more. And I think it shows on the field.
You know, the other thing is when you're talking about, I've noticed, you go to a lot of games. I know you guys have several supervisors and you go to games, major league games. Talk a little bit about when you're in a major league game, you're evaluating your umpires, what you're looking at and, some of the things you write down.
Well, there's less instruction in the minor leagues than there would be for in the major leagues than there would be for a minor league. If you go to a minor league game, there'd be a lot of instruction. The major league guys have less instruction. What we look for there is hustle on the field, and normally our guys are professional and they hustle. And it's just we're the liaison between the umpires and the office. So we'll see if there's any problems that they want to talk about. And really, it's a little bit easier to instruct or evaluate at the major league level.
As far as evaluating umpires at the minor league level, again, when you look at what they're doing on the field, then you get together with them after games, or is that later on?
Before and after, we'll talk to them. You can really see a prospect kind of stands out sometimes on a crew. Sometimes all three. There's normally a 3-man system in AAA, sometimes 4. But you can see a prospect stand out from the other umpires.
You know, one of the hardest things I would think, and I know as a coach, one of the hardest things is the rule book. You know, you got the rule book, then you got the, supposedly you have an interpretation of some of the rules. What's your advice on, yes, you can read the rule book and you read the interpretations, but what's the best way to attack it? You know, I look at the Bible. The Bible is very difficult to read. Sometimes the rule book's not easy either. What's the best advice where to start when you're starting to learn the rules?
The rule book is a document that started in the 1800s and then it's been added and improved and so on, but it's still a difficult document and sometimes it's redundant and sometimes it's poorly written, but we're making great strides. Charlie Relliford from our staff has done a tremendous job on the rules. And we also have an umpire manual that a committee gets together and makes certain interpretations of the rules and mechanics and so on. But there is a wealth of information now on the internet with rules and a lot of rules discussion. That's one of the areas that I would suggest someone, if you're a rules person and are interested in rules, you have to have a basic knowledge of the rules to be an umpire, but some are better than others. Some umpires are more interested. You should also study the history of the rules, because knowing why a rule came about helps you understand a little bit more about the rule.
Folks, if you're on Facebook, feel free to type at the bottom of the comments section some questions for Larry. And it says, hello, Larry, how are you? Diego Salas speaking to you from Argentina. Met him in Lima, Peru.
Yeah, yeah. At the Pan Am Games.
At the Pan
Am Games. I'm hoping to get to Argentina this year. Next year.
He was excited about seeing you there. So I just want, I guess that's a shout out to Larry. He's going to get a lot of shout outs. He's pretty popular worldwide. Let's talk about the interpretation a little bit. What does that really mean? You got the rule, and you have the interpretation of that rule. Is that if you don't understand that rule clearly?
Well, interpretation, if you look at a rule, sometimes it can be ambiguous, and you could go a couple of ways. So what we try to do is include examples in the rule book, say, you know, interference, include examples of interference. We also look at tapes so that you can actually see something and discuss it. Is this interference? Is it an interference? Why is it interference? Why is it not? There's certain parameters involved in it. So trying to get consistency is the big thing when you're talking about interpretation of a rule.
Now, well, you were earlier talking about the instant replay and some of the things you guys are working on. What would Larry Young want to see in the instant replay? Anything changed? Anything other than what you had discussed?
Well, we've come a long way in instant replay. When we first started it, if you remember, the manager would come out like he was going to argue a play, and the umpire and the manager would stand there. Mm-hmm. And now we have time limits placed on a manager to make his decision as to whether he's going to challenge the rule or not. So we've come a long way there in speeding up the process. We've come a long way inside the room. In a normal year, I would go once a month along with other supervisors into the replay room. So I've seen it firsthand get much quicker and much, much better. So we're really getting to the point where it's become routine now to see an instant replay.
You know, what came about right away, when I looked at instant replay, I get it. I mean, it's going to slow the game down a little bit, and they're trying to speed it up. But, you know, it seems like it's really working because, you know, we just want the call to be right. But there's so much respect for umpires, because once you started the instant replay and you start to realize they're showing that replay, and all of us that are sitting around at home or anywhere, even in the radio booth, you're sitting there going, and you're trying to make a decision, and we got the slow motion radar. We still can't make the decision, and that's how difficult it is. So I would assume that you were in favor of that because, one, you guys do a great job, but you still like to make sure 100%.
Well, you can't be sure 100%. As you said, there are some that are so close that even a major league umpire with two or three major league umpires and the supervisors behind him in the replay room, and you're watching it, you're slowing it down, and you're seeing all these different angles, and you still can't tell, that's when you go with the stands. And whatever the umpire called, that's what you go with. But there are times when you still can't tell. It's not 100%.
So, and that's how – yep. Go ahead.
What I'd like to see changed is when a runner slides into second base and he's safe by a mile and he bounces up a little bit off the bag and – the fielder keeps the tag on him, which now they're taught to do, and you see a half inch between the bag and the runner, we're forced to change that into an out. And it's not the way the game should be played. You know, I don't know how you change it, though. I don't know how you – I really don't have an answer. I just like to see it change.
And for our baseball coaches and softball coaches out there, you know, instant replay, what it's done for coaches is something we've been trying to teach for a long time, but it took instant replay to do it, and that is to stay with the tag. You know, because, you know, in the old days, you just swiped it and you never stayed with the tag. And sometimes you could have got the guy coming off the base. The part that I'm curious about, and I wonder if it ever came up, I always wondered this about instant replay. Because, you know, umpiring at a lower level, I have a lot of respect for umpires. The umpire has to make that call on the field But the manager, he gets to have his instant replay guy look at it on television. I personally would like it where the manager doesn't have the instant replay. He has to make that same decision if he's going to challenge it or not on what he saw.
Yeah, I've heard that. That's why we went to 10 seconds to be able to make a decision. So they have a very short time now to make the decision. The one thing we don't want to do too much is that we want to get the play right.
Yes.
And there's nothing worse. I umpired in an era before instant replay and missed many calls that I saw later in the locker room, then I saw on ESPN, then I saw on CNN. And you don't want to be wrong. So this has helped our umpires. They were good in the first place, and now adding instant replay, they're even better. So you want to take advantage of the technology is what I'm trying to say. It's there. You don't want to be wrong, and you want to get things right.
Absolutely. This is a little bit more. I don't know if it's personal, but when it comes to the strike zone, because we're going to get a question here from Pablo Tesoro in a second on the strike zone. But, you know, I was curious. You know, I remember umpiring at times, and I thought it was pretty good. And I believe you have to have that mentality that you're good if you're going to do it. But at times, once in a while, I felt like, you know, I knew when I missed a call. I didn't try to make up for it, but it seemed like I did at times make up for it. Does that make any sense?
You can't. You just can't. You have to, if you thought you missed a call and maybe even knew that you missed a call, you have to bear down and get the next work on the next play. You have to move on. You can't dwell on it. And if you try to make it up and be a good guy and make it up, you're not going to be a good guy. You're just going to make two wrongs. And the thing is, if you miss a call, you have to kind of analyze why you missed a call. Were you too quick on it? Were you moving? Were you doing something that, you know, or you just had a faulty judgment? But you got to move on, and you got to get the next one right, and the next one right, and the next one right.
Larry, did when you were at home plate, I know this is probably not an easy thing, but did you know who the hitter was, or did you blank that out?
You blank it out. You know who the hitter is when he comes up, obviously. But it's kind of like tunnel vision. When you're behind home plate, you're looking at the pitcher and you're looking at the hitter and you're blocking out everything else. There might be 50, 60,000 fans in the stands and millions watching at home. You don't think about that. You're just tunnel vision, and you're looking at the imaginary strike zone and picturing in your mind. When the pitch comes in, everything else is reaction. So you don't think about at that point who's hitting.
Let's take a question. Pablo Tesoro from Argentina. Hello, Larry. Can you comment about how the strike zone has changed in the past at MLB and what are the trends today?
Well, I think the biggest change, do you want me to do this in Spanish or you want me to do
No,
this?
Pablo's a good English guy, man. He's also very well educated. Went to Missouri, went to Springfield, Missouri University there. Got his master's, his doctorate. So you don't have
to worry about that. My Spanish isn't as good as yours, Peter, so I'm going to stick. I have kind of baseball Spanglish. But I'm working on it, actually. I'm working on it. But the biggest change in that has evolved over the years is keeping the ball on the plate. Now, we used to go off the plate and call strikes. We did. I mean, this was before Quest Tech. It was before the system that we have now. I think the biggest thing now is you won't see umpires go off the plate calling balls and strikes. And that's the biggest change.
The zone itself hasn't changed much, or has that changed?
It's evolved. Really, before my time, we used to call higher strikes at the letters. You call one up at the letters now, you'll hear a lot of screaming from both dugouts. So that's evolved as well. I think the knee has been pretty consistent over the years. But the high strike at the letters, that's evolved. You go probably a midpoint between the letters and the belt line now. And off the plate is not called as it used to be.
All right. It's coming from an inexperienced umpire for sure. But if we're going to have a strike zone anywhere, shouldn't it also be adjusted in the rules?
What do you mean? I don't know what
you
mean.
Well, if the strike zone, the Major League umpire strike zone right now is what?
Well, it's just as I said, the top is a midpoint between the letters and the belt. The bottom is the bottom of the knee.
Okay.
So so it is pretty much what the rule book says.
Okay, because I remember at times I thought maybe at times like they weren't calling anything above the belt. But again, like you said, that's evolved. We got great question here from Mark Fuller, Hall of Fame coach. I'd like to hear what were the toughest pitches for you to call and how did you make an adjustment in those pitches to get it, you know, to make it easier for you?
Well, that's easy. The toughest for any umpire to call is the knuckleball because the pitcher doesn't know where it's going. The pitcher doesn't know where it's going. The catcher doesn't know where it's going. And we're supposed to call it a ball or strike. What you have to do there, our biggest thing in umpiring is calling it too quick. So we have to slow the timing down on a knuckleball. And one time I had two knuckleball pitchers going against each other. I had Wakefield and Negro going against each other. That was a long day. And then the contrast, one time I had Negro and Randy Johnson, who's throwing, you know, 98 miles an hour, and Negro's throwing about 60 with a knuckleball. So the knuckleball is the hardest pitch for an umpire to call.
You know, another great question from Argentina, but Diego Salas wants to know, you know, for Argentina umpires, but I think it can relate to other countries also, to reach a certain level, whether it be minor league baseball or looking to play, you know, the Premier 12 or World Baseball Classic event or even, you know, an international event, what is it going to take for those guys to get to that level?
I think they're on the right, if it's specific to Argentina, I think they're in the right path because now they're starting to get into more international tournaments. And to do that, the umpires are going to have to do the same thing. They're going to have to start working international baseball. And that's a stepping stone, but I think they're in the right path right now.
You know, and shout out to Argentina. They got the Pro League there. It's a very good one.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah, I heard that.
It's underrated. Yeah,
I'm hoping to get there.
Yeah, very good league and very competitive, high level. And I think that's going to raise their baseball there, which will also, as you know, like you said, raise their umpires. Because, I'm assuming one of the hardest things is seeing velocity. If you haven't seen that velocity, that makes it difficult, right?
Well, yeah. Velocity isn't really that much different. So you can have someone that throws very, very hard, but he doesn't know where it's going. So if he has a fastball and he has other pitches on top of that, he's more effective.
Your favorite pitcher that you love umpiring, the type of pitches he has, what's your favorite one that makes it easier for you?
This is a crazy one, but a guy named Moose Hoss back in probably the 80s with Milwaukee. He was just very, very consistent, and he was always around the plate. Glavin was fantastic. Greg Maddux was fantastic to work. He was great. He would test you early. He had such great control that he would go to the outside corner as far as you go, and when you started calling balls, that's where he knew the limit was. He was a dream.
Those guys are smart, man. Carlos Reyes wants to know what rule changes are working for this year, or I guess what you're looking at.
We don't know. We had several rules for 2020, and they're out the window, to be quite honest with you. I don't know what our season's going to look like if we start in July, which I'm hopeful we will. I don't know. I don't have any inside information on that, but from what I'm hearing from sources, they're going to try to do it, but I think it's very dependent, of course, on the virus and the strides we'll make in the next couple of weeks in that regard. But one of the biggest rule changes we were going to have was a relief pitcher that comes in must pitch to three hitters.
Right.
So you're not going to see this righty lefty, righty lefty, righty lefty as often. They have to pitch to at least three hitters. Again, who knows what the rules are going to be this year?
You know, what would Larry Young, if Larry Young had all the decisions, what rules would you change that maybe are old fashioned, maybe just don't relate anymore into the rules? Are there any out there?
If I were running things, I would give umpire supervisors a raise in pay.
I agree with you.
There are a number of rules. The rules changes are difficult because sometimes when you change one rule, you back into another one, and it's hard to do. And anytime we change a rule or propose to have a rule change, Brian Gorman is now an active umpire, and he's on the rules committee, and Charlie Relliford is very active there, and they're constantly looking at ways to improve the rule book. But then you have to get it through the Players Association. Mm. So a rule that might be umpire-friendly, so to speak, to use the term, might not be player-friendly. So sometimes we run into that.
Love it. Hey, Fabrizio is on from Italy.
Fabrizio,
yes.
Fabrizi.
Another very good umpire. Fabrizio, come stai? Spero tutto bene.
You okay? Is he okay? First of all, ask if he's okay.
I did, and I think he'll type it, but I think he is. Fabrizio is one of these umpires in great shape, too. That virus... Oh, yeah. That virus, he's not going to get the Fabrizio.
I think it, I don't know about that. But Fabrizio is, Fabrizio worked for us several times in the World Baseball Classic. Very good umpire.
A good friend of mine, Pat Arter, former agent, he's retired. He had a question. Your thoughts on catchers framing pitches? It's now being taught to young catchers also. And I'll add that because I've seen this one. You can see it visually where, you know, a guy catches a ball down here. His elbow stays here, but his hand comes here, and he seems to get the call. Again, visually, that's just me looking
at
it.
They're getting so good at pulling pitches. And, again, and I hate to sound like a dinosaur, but in my day, we didn't allow that. The first time a catcher did it, we told them that's it and no more. But now everybody's doing it, and it's impossible to stop. So it makes it more difficult on the umpire, to be honest with you. Tony Pena used to do it all the time, and I told him every time he did it, I would snap the back of his chest protector. So he did it to me a couple of times. I snapped the back of his chest protector, and it hurt, I'm sure. But the third time I did it, I had it about a foot away from his body ready to snap it. So they're getting very, very good at framing pitches. And it's tougher to call.
You know, Larry, you know, they're getting good. And we've got some great speakers that are catching instructors in the, you know, in professional baseball, the big league level, minor league level. They're studying umpires. They're studying your positions. They're studying your heat maps, you know, your calls. They're studying – Yeah, the heat map, it's amazing knowing where you call most of the strikes, what locations, you know, what pitches. It's incredible. It was mind-boggling when I saw part of this. And I'm wondering, I mean, they're doing that type of studying. The umpires, what do they study?
Well, you know, that's nothing new, really. The heat map is something new, but studying umpires is nothing new because I know a lot of pitchers told me that they used to keep books on an umpire. Roger Clemens specifically
used to
keep notes on umpires about what their tendencies were. So it's become more scientific and taking advantage of technology, but it's not really anything new. We talk about the pitchers before the game and what they throw. We're more interested in the catchers and how they receive the ball, to be quite honest with you. We had good catchers that would receive the ball. And we had what we call butchers and guys that would not give you a good shot at it and, you know, have real just batting the ball around. Those guys were tough to work behind.
What's the best position a catcher could be in to make it easier for you? And I ask this from the standpoint of several things, the position, up and down, forward, backwards, and also you know, how they catch the ball. Sometimes they'll catch and hold for a little bit.
Well, the worst thing they can do, and I wish I, you know, was able to show you this, but the worst thing they can do is take the slot away from us. And by that, I mean, if you have a right-handed hitter and you have a catcher that moves over into the left, into the almost the batter's box, but in between the batter's box and the plate, that's the area we call the slot, and that's the area we work. You take that slot away from us, now we're going to have to take our head up and over the catcher, and we're going to have to look over the top of his head, which we don't want to do. That's a disadvantage for a catcher to do that for his own pitcher, because now he's taking away the ability to see a pitch, especially that low inside pitch. So, you know, I don't tell the catchers where they should position themselves. I don't think that's something I can do as an umpire, but I do tell coaches when they ask me that question, I tell them if they move over and take the slot away, you're not going to get that pitch because I can't see it.
You know, a long time ago, I told you the story. I was at Mickey Owen Baseball School under Carl Luton. I was a young kid, and I was, you know, going through the rules and had a chance to learn it, to be an umpire a little bit. And I remember Carl always telling me, and I think this might have changed, you know, when the catcher catches it, if the coach yells, "Where is that pitch?" he would tell me to say it was a strike or a ball. He would never say location. But I've heard on mics, umpires nowadays tell managers where that pitch was at.
Yeah, yeah. You can pick your spots. And I was also in the Mickey Owens umpire school, and I worked for Carl Luton.
Small world.
Small world after all.
There's a difference. There's a difference. You went to the big leagues as an umpire, and I retired real young.
if a manager or coach asks me and he's not being obnoxious about it, I'll tell him where the pitch was, where I thought it was. And, if he wants to argue further, then I'll handle it. But I think he's entitled. If it's done in a, you know, decent manner, I'll give him a decent answer.
You know, I love that. Yeah. And the communication, let's talk about that, because I think the communication umpire and the manager is an important relationship. Talk about, if you were talking to coaches, which you do, because I think it's important that umpires talk to coaches at seminars and that coaches attend umpire seminars so they can learn the rules. But if you were at a Congress talking to coaches, what would you say to them is the best way to handle situations, whether it's what you think is a bad call or whatever the situation is?
I would just, be honest as a coach. And if you have a question, you want to ask it and you do it in a decent manner, I'm going to do the same to you. You show me respect, I'll show you respect, and we'll work together on it. We can't be talking about pitches the whole game. We have to put a stop at it at some point.
Mm-hmm.
As far as confrontation, sometimes when you get to the higher levels, not the lower levels, but when you get to the higher levels, major college on up into the professional ranks, sometimes it's the manager's coach's job to get thrown out of a game or to argue. Sometimes his heart's not in it, but he'll come out anyway and we'll have an argument. 99% of the objections that I had in the big leagues were business. The ones with Earl Weaver were not business. They were personal. But everybody else was heat of the moment type of thing. I got to go out. I got to show my players I'm taking care of them. I've got to make a point and so on. But usually the next day it's forgotten. But I would not carry – I would tell them don't carry a grudge. I won't. If you have a question, ask it. I'll answer it, and hopefully we can get along. If we don't, then we'll go to the next step.
You've had to have some great, obviously, throughout the year, some great talks with managers. I mean, I heard stories, and you may have some where, you know, the umpire was yelling and screaming, but he really wasn't. He was just making it up for the players.
Well, I had one with Gene Lamont. Gene Lamont, you know, Gene's from Kirkland, our neck of the woods there in Chicago. Yep. And Gene and I used to referee basketball together in the winter. So now he's managing the White Sox, and you know, I'm working a game, and I throw out Carlton Fisk. And Gene comes out and says, "Well, you're going to have to throw me out too." And I said, "Gene, we're friends. How am I going to throw you out?" So he started gesturing and saying, "Well, I'm going to go downtown afterwards, and I'm going to buy you a beer, and I'm going to buy the first beer." And we went back and forth like that. And, that's happened. But most of the time, the objections are just, you know, they're doing their job, I'm doing my job.
Were there days where you went to work and you knew who the manager was that day, and then you were maybe a little bit more prepared because of that type of manager and not as relaxed?
No, I don't think you can do that, because even the toughest managers may not say a word that day. And if you come in there with a chip on your shoulder and expecting trouble, I guess you'll find it quicker than you want.
Yeah.
Well, every day is the same.
Folks, we're going to get to your questions on Facebook. You guys have been great. A lot of people on Facebook. And I think this is one of the most important sessions when it comes to educating coaches, players, and parents in the game of baseball, because we're always talking about development and how do you make the players better, but we're not talking much about the rules of the game, which are so critical. I see so many coaches at young levels go argue a call. And then, you know, I remember Larry and Mickey on baseball school a couple times, coaches with pretty good coaches, some experienced ones, you know, obviously a lot older than me. I was a kid. They would come out and argue a call. And because I knew the rule, I remember it really well. I knew they were arguing the rule incorrectly. So I can't see. I always tell coaches, don't go out there unless you know what you're talking about.
Well, you're talking about youth leagues. I think that's a totally, totally different way to manage, coach, and umpire. I think that you have to be an instructor in those leagues. And I have a grandson, 7 years old, that loves playing baseball and hope he gets a chance to play some this year. And I'm hoping that he has coaches that coach and teach and rather than work on an umpire. You don't do that. And as an umpire, you have to teach as well. You know, you have to tell a pitcher that he's not stopping in the set position instead of going, that's a balk, that's a balk, that's a balk. You have to be an instructor. So it's a totally different thing with youth leagues than it is in the higher levels.
Well said. I agree with you. And for coaches out there and parents especially, you've got young kids umpiring. You know, sometimes you have a 15-year-old umpiring a 12-year-old game. You know, show respect. Teach them what it means to be respectful of both sides. They're going to make mistakes. You know, umpire is no different than playing. You're going to make mistakes. It's how you deal with it. And I think both aspects or both areas have to understand that. Larry, Rob Allen asks, who was your favorite crew chief that you ever had in your career?
Richie Garcia. Richie Garcia was my mentor. He helped me so much. He loved to teach. He was a great teacher. And he helped me so much. I worked a lot of years with Richie, and we remain good friends. So that's an easy one.
Hey, speaking about, the other day I was on with, I think, Clint Hurdle. I can't remember who it was now. But speaking about, you know, your 1995 lockout and, you know, being a referee for the World Wrestling Federation, you know, with The Undertaker and King Kong Bundy. Guess who's on? Ted Barrett, Major League umpire. And, you know, I remember, and Ted's the guy you want on your side if you were up against King Kong Bundy and The Undertaker.
Yeah, it would take Ted and myself and two other guys to take care of King Kong Bundy.
Ted's pretty tough. He's a former boxer, if I remember right.
Oh, he's not. He's not really tough at all. I slap him around all the time. So.
He says Larry was a great umpire and is a great instructor. More important, a first-class person, an underrated profession wrestling referee. So he throws that at you.
You know, my wife, if she's watching, she's going to be really mad that you brought it up because she hated the wrestling aspect. She never wanted me to do it, but you know, I had a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah, and you got to do something during the strike. What else were you going to do?
Well, I did it more than during the strike. That's the sore point. But I did. I worked in Chicago at what's the big building in Chicago? I can't even think of what it's called now. The house that Jordan built, United Center.
United Center. Yep. One more. Let me see here. We're looking at, because sometimes we get a lot. Tim Myers asking if you're coming to Europe. I'm sure Larry's always coming to Europe.
Germany, yeah. He's one of our German umpires.
I'm sure you're going as long as they're letting us fly and it's safe.
I'll be back doing my thing around the world. Have you ever counted how many countries you've been to?
Over 45.
So you've got me by about 20.
Wait. Tell the folks. I got you about 20. But your frequent flyer miles are like 3 million more than mine. You get special treatment, I hear.
I got to say, American treats me well. I got to say. But I've been to Japan like 10 times. I've been to countries several different times, but different countries, 25, I think. But, yeah, we're gonna get back at it as soon as we can.
You know, Pat Arter asked a great question. It's one of the ones that was going to come up sooner or later. The balk, that's always – is that the toughest call in baseball?
Well, I don't know if it's the toughest, but you have to know what you're looking for. Usually, the most common balk is the one where the pitcher doesn't stop on his set position, and also stepping toward a base, left-hander stepping toward a base, going behind a rubber. I don't know if it's the toughest, but it's one that's frequently misunderstood.
You know, and you mentioned the left-hander. There's nothing in the rule that everybody keeps bringing up, this 45-foot step, whatever you call it, the step, the 45 angle. Explain that, please.
Well, first of all, if someone comes out and says he's stepping toward a 45 or he's breaking a 45, they don't know what they're talking about because that's not in the rule book. The rule book says he stepped directly toward a base. And we still have some people in the big leagues that bring that up. And we had some announcers that bring it up. Tim McCarver was famous for saying about the 45-foot line, and there's nothing in the rule book about that.
You know, and that was my point earlier, you know, make sure if you're going to say something, please know the rules. I know we can't know them all, but at least double check it before. And, you know, I always get caught up. I want to bring this up. At Mickey on Baseball School, I remember Carl teaching me, and I want to go back a little bit to make sure of this. Sometimes you have a batter that's in the batter's box, and the pitcher starts to wind up, right? And the batter steps out. There's a runner on, and the pitcher stops. I was always taught right away, call time, because the hitter can't create a balk. Am I on the right track there?
You are. That's correct. The hitter cannot. That is not a balk. So it's a timeout. You protect the right person there.
And what happens if I'm a rookie umpire at any level, and I don't make that call? I don't say anything. He doesn't throw it. Nothing happens. What do you do?
Well, you got to call something, and hopefully your partner's going to step in, and hopefully the rookie umpire, we've all done that, hopefully the rookie umpire learns from his mistakes. That's the big thing in umpiring, too. You're going to make mistakes, but learn from the mistakes.
And I think what I like a lot about umpires, I love when they get together just to get the call right. Now, I know we got instant replay, but let's take leagues that don't have it. I think the most important thing is, let's say an umpire makes a call, and again, I can't think of a call right now, but let's say he makes a call, and how do you work on if the umpires come together? Does the manager ask that? Like if the manager comes out and says, hey, did Joe see that? Can you ask him?
Yeah, they will. And sometimes they overuse that. Sometimes you'll have a bang-bang play at first base. Nothing unusual happens. The manager will come out and say, you got to ask somebody on this. Well, you're not going to ask somebody on this. But if there's something unusual that happens and another umpire has information that's going to be useful to the calling umpire, that umpire should start going toward the argument so that the calling umpire sees him, stops. He'll stop the argument, and they'll get together. So the big thing is to get it right. And sometimes you have to swallow your pride, but you work as a team and you try to get it right. Sometimes you have to get together on it. That has changed over the years. When I started, you made a call and you lived or died with it. And a lot of times you died with it. So now we try to get it right either by crew consultation or instant replay.
You know, one of the toughest, and folks, shout out to everybody on Facebook. I think Larry's broken a record on Facebook. And I've had some pretty good guests, I think. Clint Hurdle, and we've had some, you know, the hitting coach with the Cubs, my good friend Anthony Iaposi. I mean, we just had good people. And the thing I wanted to ask, I want to go back to the catcher because it's one area I failed to ask. When a catcher, when somebody's stealing and the catcher, you know, catchers have a tendency to come up a little too early. Is that a really tough call, or have you already made that ball strike call already?
It's a tough call, and sometimes you get blocked out. Sometimes you can't see it. If you can see it, you call it. But if you can't see it, you know it's going to be a ball. But I would think that happens at younger levels.
Sure.
In the big leagues, they try to they're taught to stay down and come out of the crouch. But that's a tough call. It's a tough thing to see.
If you're a young umpire, you're going to tell that, like, say, you know, it might have been a strike, but you didn't see it. You know, are you going to tell him you didn't see it and why?
No, he's going to come back and he's going to want to know where it was. And the thing is, I didn't see it. I couldn't see it. If you use that as a crutch too often, I didn't see it, I didn't see it, I didn't see it. Now you're going to lose credibility. A young umpire, let's just say umpire in the major leagues. The first 5 years of an umpire's life in major leagues is very, very tough because he's getting tested every day, trying to find out what kind of umpire it is, what kind of temperament it is, what kind of person he is. So those first 5 years are very, very tough. And that's when you develop your reputation. That reputation is going to be with you the rest of your career, good or bad.
Hey, I think you're going to get a chance to instruct one of your umpires live on Facebook. Rob Allen.
Teddy worked with me for many years, Teddy Barrett.
Yes, and this is Rob Allen that's asking the question now.
Rob worked for us various times.
And it's actually a comment. He says, once a manager yelled at me that he went past the 45, I yelled back at the dugout, I had him at 43. The whole entire dugout erupted into laughter, and the manager never said anything anymore.
That's a pretty good answer. That's a pretty good answer. I like that.
Realistically, you know, do you want to later on tell the coach, there is no 45? I mean, don't you want to educate him?
Yeah, many times between innings when things have calmed down, many times I've gone over the dugout and said, you know, you're wrong on that rule, and we'll talk about it in a calm way. That's been a very effective way to deal with it.
You know, interesting question. Tim Meyer, speaking of announcers, he says, does Larry think it would be a good idea to have a rules experts in the press box or in the box with the commentators? What does he think of the idea that an umpire on the field explains the outcome of the call for the fans and the TV audience like they do in the NFL?
Well, that's exactly what we're going to do.
Yeah.
With instant replay now, we're going to take a page from the NFL officials, and the umpires, after they come back off of the headsets after a review, are going to explain the call. So that's going to happen if we have a season, if we have replay this year, and when we resume to normalcy, that's what's going to happen.
All right. Now, you know, this one is a common one, comes up all the time, but I think it's important to discuss because it sounds basic, but it doesn't seem as basic as it sounds. That's the infield fly rule. You've always seen some controversy because of, I think the most important part is, you know, where's the fielder at when he starts and where he ends up and all that.
Well, he's got to be an infielder, first of all. And with all the shifts, it's a little more difficult now.
Oh, yeah.
Because now sometimes you have an infielder that's actually a short outfielder, to borrow a softball term. But you have to have – it's got to be ordinary effort. We look at the fielder's shoulders in relation to the infield. If he's facing the outfield when he's settling under it, we're not going to call an infield fly. That's not going to be ordinary effort. It's judgment. Yeah, but we do have certain things that we look for.
No, I'm giving you I'm giving you some of the tough situations in baseball, but really, you know what the tough ones are. What's the toughest calls for umpires that are on the field?
Joe West has a favorite saying when he's asked that question, is what's the toughest call? He'll say the next one. That's always Joe's stock answer.
They're all tough, I'm sure.
They're all pretty tough. It is harder now to umpire than in the big leagues than it was in my day because of instant replay. There was a time when the throw beat the runner, slaps the ball down, and he was out. Those days are long gone. Now you have to make sure that there is actually a tag, and it's very, very tough to umpire now in the big leagues. But the toughest one that the most misses that we have is the force play at first base. And so I'd have to say that is the toughest.
And I think that's, you know, one of the reasons, obviously, that you have the rotation every day. Somebody's in a different position. I mean, because you're behind home plate. Then if you go to first, those are two tough, very, very hard positions, home plate and first base. One of the tough ones, and you hear this all the time, tie goes to the runner.
No, there is no such thing in the rule book. So it says that the throw has to beat him. And if it doesn't, then he's safe. But there is no tie goes to the runner. And if a manager comes out with that, immediately, there are certain times the manager comes out and says certain things, he immediately loses credibility. That would be one.
I'm going to try to read this one from Winfred Berkvins.
Another one of my boys.
Yes, they're all. And you know, it's almost like it's a test here for all your guys. They better be right on some of these things they're saying.
Yeah, these guys don't have anything to do today, for gosh sakes.
That's right. I'm telling you, you broke a record on Facebook, man. You're awesome. Recently, there were a couple of videos on the internet about a pitcher who, during his windup, moves the ball from his throwing hand to the hand with the glove, and then he shows his empty throwing hand to the batter, and subsequently, without stopping his motion during the pitch, takes the ball back in the throwing hand and pitches the ball. If you seen this, and what's your opinion, legal or not, assuming there are no runners on?
I'd have to see it. Does not, with no runners on, I would say it's okay. But that's one of those, you really have to see it.
Yeah.
It sounds okay to me.
You know, and I'll be honest with you, I saw it and I still can't explain it because it was wacky. And, you know, I'm thinking to myself, you know, that pitcher needs to worry about becoming a better pitcher than trying to worry about doing all that fancy stuff with the ball.
I couldn't agree with you more. We have so many pitchers doing so many gimmicky things now to try to get away with throwing the timing off of the hitter. I agree with you. I think he's just concentrating on throwing the ball, but maybe that's why he's doing it.
Well, we see it everything around the world. We've seen everything, and I got to tell you, I'm not going to mention the place, but you know, I had a guy ask me, you know, you get into a set position, and he said, if my pants fall off, would that be a good pickoff move? Because, you know, that runner would look at the pants and then I can pick. So, you know, I'm sure you've had some wild questions out there. What's the craziest question you've ever had as an umpire?
Oh, I can't think of anything right offhand, but,
I'll give you one. A guy asked me this, and I saw this in a tryout. This was interesting. Instead of facing the batter, the pitcher, he was facing center field. And this really happened in a tryout, professional tryout. It was an open one. And he started his windup, and then he turned around and threw home.
Can't do it. That's covered in the rule book, actually.
You cannot do it or can't do it.
That's covered in the rule book.
So you cannot do it.
To deliver the ball.
Okay. Well, that's easy. That makes us go on, man. Pat Arter asks, what city's the hardest on umpires?
Hardest on umpires?
Yeah, toughest city.
Oh, well, I think the toughest fans. I can say this now, I guess, because I'm retired from the field, but I think the toughest fans are in Oakland. Man, they're tough.
What about Philly? He asked.
Philly's okay. I don't. Nothing stands out to me in Philly, but it does in Oakland.
Larry, one of the obvious things in umpiring is vision. You know, you've got to have pretty good vision. I got a couple questions on that. One, the umpire, what are they trained to look at? And I know people are going to say, look at the ball. I get that. It's just like a hitter, right? Of course they're going to look at the ball. But what are they trained to look at to understand or have the best chance of picking the ball up early enough, tracking it well? And is there any training that you guys do now with all the technology out there?
I can tell you, we'll talk about being a plate umpire. Now, some of the things you just mentioned are the terms that we use. One is tracking. We tell our plate umpire not to move his head when the pitch comes in, because anytime you move your head, your vision gets distorted. If you move your head down, you're going to drive that pitch into the ground with your vision. So we tell our people to keep their heads still and track only with their eyes. We tell them not to move their head, move your eyes only. And sometimes it's very difficult for them to do. And I can tell when an umpire is having trouble because I see him moving. And that's one of the very, very basic things we do. And once they get that concept, it becomes a lot easier for them to track the ball.
And is there training programs you guys have? I know, and interesting you said that, because a lot of vision experts, that's what they're telling hitters also, move your eyes, don't move your head. Are there programs that you guys are using? Is there home training going on? There's a lot of online training for hitters nowadays to be able to improve their ability to see the ball better.
There's a lot of online clinics that for umpires. If you Google that, there's a lot of stuff out there. And hopefully they're saying the right things.
Yes, and I mean, and you didn't have that advantage when you umpired.
No. When I first started, the umpires, the old-timers that I worked with, well-meaning guys, good umpires, seat-of-the-pants guys, they would tell you to move your head down and take a look at that pitch. They would actually come in and say, you're not moving your head enough. And then I found out when I got to the umpire school, it was totally wrong. So hopefully the information's out there, and hopefully it's accurate.
You know, let's we're getting to the end here. I want to stay on schedule out of respect because you've got a lot of things. As you said, you've got a lot of conference calls, Zoom calls with umpires, and I'm sure Major League Baseball, you're doing a lot of things. Can you talk about briefly interference and obstruction?
No, that's not a brief conversation.
That's too long?
I'll give you a quick one. When there's a batted ball and a ground ball and the fielder is in the act of fielding the ball, he has the right to field the ball. He has the right of way. If a runner comes by and makes contact with him or gets in his way without making contact, that's going to be interference. Conversely, if the ball is not anywhere near a fielder and a runner's running, the runner has the right of way. So a fielder, if he interferes with him, then he's actually obstructed him, and an obstruction is called. That's the basic difference, but it's probably more half hour answer than it is a, half.
That's okay. No, but at least it gives a general guidance, because again, coaches can go in and read the rules and see the interpretations. And the other one I think that comes up a lot is home plate. You know, the ball that hits home plate, where it hits and where it ends up.
Well, home plate, a lot of people think that if the ball hits home plate, that it's foul. Actually, home plate is entirely in fair territory. So if it hits home plate, it's fair. And then you have to wait until it stops rolling or it's fielded. But home plate is in fair territory.
Larry, I want to end with this. You've been very public about it. You've been helping a lot of people. You battled cancer. You fought it and you overcame it. At the time, you lost 70 pounds. I think 50 was on purpose. Talk about what you're doing, to help people understand what, once they do get cancer, because that's not an easy thing. And I surely can't explain it because I've never been through it. Talk about that.
Well, I'm a 4-year survivor right now and counting of pancreatic cancer. And thanks to the people at Rush Hospital, Dr. Joe Meyer at Rush Hospital, who's a genius, I was able to get to this point. Not completely out of the woods. I don't think you ever are with this type of thing, but it was a very rough surgery, rough chemo and so on, but it was necessary. And now I'm feeling great. And I just want I tell people that get this diagnosis that it's going to be tough, but if you are able to get the surgery, it's called the Whipple surgery, and if you are able to withstand the chemo, you have a good shot. You have a good chance, and they've come a long way with treatment of pancreatic cancer, and you can live a good life, a normal life, and it's something you have to fight, but you can do it. So I tell people, and we have walks throughout the world. We've had some in Chicago with thousands and thousands of people. We've had them in Milwaukee, and we just had one in Tampa a couple months ago, where we meet other survivors, and we meet people who are have lost their loved ones. It's a very tough disease, but you can live. You can survive it.
Fantastic. That's a great message. And on a little fun note for my wife, I'll mention this. You think that maybe we should, if you're going to get into umpiring, you should probably, at least at the higher levels, maybe wait till you get married, and you're married about 4 or 5 years, because then you can handle the rest of the stuff.
Well, I was, and I still am for 45 years. She's been through
wow.
it all. So
love it.
And she made the money when I was in the minor league, so maybe that's a good idea.
Absolutely. And you know what? And I kid, but thank God for our wives, because we would not be doing what we're doing without their support.
I hear you.
Larry, awesome. Thanks. Thanks, man. You're one of the best. I tell you, thanks for your time. I really appreciate it. Be safe. I know you're going to be traveling to Chicago by car, I think you had said. Be safe.
Everyone be safe. We'll get through this.
And you know what? Last message to coaches. About maybe something, when it comes to dealing with umpires. Last message here. It'd be great to end it on.
The last message I can get is probably to youth coaches don't be an umpire baiter, be a teacher. I guess that would be the thing I would say.
Fantastic. Great message. Short and sweet. Those are the best ones. Folks, that is Larry Young, Major League Supervisor for Major League Baseball. Just a super individual. I want to thank Larry. I want to thank our producer, Brian Kroc, with the Lineup Media Group. Check it out, lineupmediagroup.com. Of course, I want to thank all our listeners in the U.S. and around the world. You make our show. Guys and gals who joined us on Facebook, you were fantastic. You broke the record. Larry Young had the most Facebook people ever so far. I want to thank all of you. Of course, don't forget, we're going to be joining tomorrow Don Paul, former Major League pitcher. He's got a great story how he made it to the big leagues. But not just that, we're going to discuss something that may not be baseball related, but it's about your finances during these tough times. People make a lot of mistakes, and he's a financial planner, financial expert. So we're going to talk to him about that too. So it's going to be baseball and financial stuff. So folks, thanks again. Share the show. Don't forget, if you didn't see it live on Facebook, you can still check it out on YouTube, Peter Caliendo, Instagram, Twitter, Baseball Out. And it'll be on the podcast audio, baseballoutsidethebox.com. Remember, this is a show that interviews baseball's best coaching minds who love to challenge the status quo. Thank you for joining us. God bless you. Stay safe. And we'll see you tomorrow, 1 p.m. Central Time in the U.S.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.